All right. Sandy Turrentine on tenor sax. Tommy, the brother, Tommy Turrentine on trumpet. Sonny Clark is on piano. This was his last recording. Kenny Burrell on guitar. Butch Warren on bass. And Al Hayward on drums. This is from Turrentine's 1962 album of the same title, Jubilee Shout. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, having a meltdown in Florida over technical stuff. But we have some really phenomenal people who, no matter what the challenge is, can help you through it. So I'm glad that we're not using our usual method of communicating today, but we are going to be communicating today. So I thank them very much for helping us out here and pulling us through. What we're going to talk about is part two of what we talked about yesterday, and this coming in the wake of the tragedy that we witnessed. We didn't witness it, but the tragedy that was witnessed with this young man going into his high school, shooting and killing. I don't even like talking about it. But we're going to talk about it in the sense that it is symptomatic of social deterioration in our country. And it brings to the fore something that we don't like talking about, and that is this obsession in the United States with guns and violence. And usually the subject, I have to say plainly, usually the subject comes up when we have people of color as the agent or agents of this kind of violence. People talk about it all the time. In this case, it was a white young man killing young white people, students. And there's a particular story associated with that dynamic. And it is not, although the media would have us believe, well, it's just another mass killing. No, there are differences here. And there are differences in how society is reacting, how authorities are reacting, how this whole thing is being treated now. And we are going to talk about that. So I started, when we talked yesterday, we talked about questions. I like to ask questions. There's no such thing as the right answer or the wrong answer. It's just your answer. But I ask the questions to provoke your answers and to see what comes out in your answers and where do we go from there with that information. The first question I asked yesterday, which people addressed themselves to, was, based on your own observation, direct experience, and news reports you've seen, read, or listened to, has progress been made on race in America? If so, in what ways? Today's questions are different, and you may choose any one of these questions to respond to. America's gun culture is so deeply ingrained in its society and culture that it's beyond change, is it? Is it beyond change? Is it so deeply ingrained in American culture that American culture is beyond change? Are gun laws effective? Are we destined to live with violence? What must be done to significantly change this aspect of American life? And finally, where does gun violence fall on your list, your personal list of America's plagues? Social, political, economic plagues, you pick it. But where does gun violence fall on your list? And we'll get to the phones right away. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let's get the conversation going. Remember, I've been cautioning you and advising you, there's no such thing as a wrong opinion. You just have an opinion. What we're interested in is your rationale. What is the rationale behind your opinion? That is very interesting to know. So don't feel, you know, put upon like you have to explain yourself. You're explaining yourself. This is what I think. And people just have to live with it, whether they agree or disagree. It's really not important. What is important is that you do as good a job as you can to communicate the foundation of your belief, of your opinion. That is important. To explain to people, this is why I hold these views. This is why I have these beliefs. And again, it's not really for the purpose of having people agree with you or disagree. But listen, to listen and to try to understand where you're coming from. 888-874-4888. We're off to a very slow start here today. Okay, we're off to a very slow start. I don't know what people are waiting for. They're waiting to see, well, who's going to go first? And I'm going to come on behind that. Oh, do I have to change what I think now? No, it's not important. What's important is... All right, so let's start with Jackie from Brooklyn. Hello, Jackie. Okay. You're on the air.
Hello, you trees. Good afternoon Hello. To you and the listening family.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon.
Thank you for your topics. You're continuing from yesterday, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. I had my thoughts better organized yesterday. But anyway, I'm going to try. You were talking about the prevalence, not the prevalence, but the issue of gun violence and how can this be changed, or what are our thoughts about how it can be changed in America. And I can't remember the sister's name, but she called in and said that the gun is a symbol of oppression. I agree with her. And also, the issue here is that because of regional, cultural, and spiritual differences, everybody views the gun in a different way. We here in New York, you know, we may look at guns differently than people in Michigan and Montana. But the real issue for me is the lack of respect of human life, the lack of respect of parental control over their children. We see that's really missing in today's world. And these two cases where the parents purchased guns, the Rittenhouse case and the boy in Michigan that just shot up the school, and the parents were charged in that one. This is just, the tip of the needle in terms of how people view guns and how they view people who are different from them. So that's the problem. And we have to, sorry, my Alexa's acting crazy. I unplugged it. So we have to look at this from the, our own self protection perspective, as well as something that Marcus, I think his name is Marcus, talked about, the condition of the human heart. That's another issue. So it's very involved. I don't, unfortunately, I hate to be so pessimistic, but I don't hold out too much hope for things changing unless there's very strict gun laws. And even with strict gun laws, that's not going to stop the rise of the militia that already exists in this country. And these people feel, I can't really speak for them, but from the little bit I know about them, they feel they can arm themselves and then do insurrection whenever they don't agree with the government. So that's a whole nother issue about gun violence and how the gun is viewed in America. So I don't know if that's any help.
Well, it's your contribution. And what I was trying to hone in on was, do you have an idea which question you're answering?
Which question I'm answering?
Yes.
I thought it was the proliferation of gun violence and gun the concept of gun control in this country.
Okay. All right.
Well, that wasn't your question.
Well, you got a bit of everything. So we will accept that. That's perfectly fine. But I was hoping that you would hone in more specifically on one of the themes and just stick with that and give us what you thought based on...
Okay, could you repeat the themes again? I'm sorry. The theme that you...
Is American gun culture so deeply ingrained in the society that it is beyond change? Are gun laws effective? That's one question.
Okay.
Are we destined to live with violence? What must be done to significantly change this aspect of American life? That's another question. And
okay.
The third one, where does gun violence fall on your list of America's plagues?
Okay, I'll start with the last one first. I think it falls on my list.
No, you don't have to answer all three. Just pick one.
I'll just pick one. Okay,
yes.
I think that the proliferation of gun violence will not be stemmed until people really have an understanding of what is the purpose and the function of a gun. And the other issue is that getting control over guns is going to be a very difficult situation, as I already talked about, in terms of the laws and in terms of the cultural attitudes towards guns. I don't think that that's going to be changed anytime soon.
Okay.
I think gun violence has hurt a lot of people very deeply, because it's not only the people who die as a result of gun violence, but the community suffers, the loved ones of the victims suffer, everybody suffers. And we can see that how divisive, you know, when there's gun violence, what it brings out all even more divisiveness in our culture. So this is another problem. You know, it's not only that an innocent life was taken, but that families are impacted, communities are impacted, hospital workers, emergency people, even the police. There's a lot of different woundedness that comes out of the use of gun violence. But then we have to look at the overall structure of, profits before people. Gun manufacturers, they love the sale of guns, and I sorrowfully predict that it's going to be even worse. It's going to proliferate. Gun purchases, legal and illegal, are going to grow in this country as the issue of vaccines, quarantines, you know, all these other frustrations that are being placed upon society.
All right. So, well, thank you very much. You gave us quite an overview here.
Repeating the questions, I appreciate you.
Thank you. All right, Vera from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon, Latrice.
Good afternoon.
I've been reluctant to call because I recently had a stroke about 3 years ago, and my speech isn't very good. So be patient with me, please.
You're doing very well so far.
Okay, so first of all, you came out with the question, has there been any progress in this society lately? Has there been any progress with how we're treating each other and how we feel about to one another? I just want to say, I believe because everything works together. And everything works together. And nothing happens for no reason. Everything has a reason for everything. And when we had the demonstrations in 2020, I think that was a good thing because it raised the consciousness of the people. It made them see that we're all one people and we're all in it together. And it made white people have a new perspective. They started looking at black people are just like them. And they realized that. And they're not special people. They're not special people. And they got a new awareness of them and outlook on who they are. They're not special, and that has done something to their psyche. It's done something to their psyche. In some cases, it has made them. Some of them, it has turned some of them against them. Turned against themselves. They begin to hate themselves because they realize they're not special. They happen to be white. That's all. And so that doesn't give them any special privileges anymore, you know. So I think with that self-hate, they're turning inward, just like black folks. And they self-hate, turn their self-hate inward. But they're taking their self-hate inward. And if they didn't have guns, they would have knives. If they didn't have knives, they would have something else, some other weapon. So it's not the gun. It's how they feel about themselves. That's what has happened. They lost the confidence of being a special and having a special place in this society. So what I see is the main problem in this society is the type of system we're living in. Under capitalism, that is the problem because everything is for profit. Everything is for profit. And that's the only thing that counts. People don't count anymore. The system, none of the systems work. None of the system we have work. The business system, the political system, the environment, nothing works. Nothing works because we are a sick nation. We are sick people, a sick nation. All of our minds are messed up because this system has made our minds mess up. We are thriving on competition instead of cooperation. You know, we're doing things rather than for profit. Anything we get out of it. And individual desires, and that's never going to get us anywhere. We have to see ourselves as one people, one life, because that's what we are, one person and one life. We all have the are born with the same things. God gave us all the same things, the same weapons to survive in this world. And they're destroying everything. They're destroying everything to help us survive. Everything helps us survive and be healthy. We can't be healthy if we can't eat properly. We can't be healthy if we can't breathe good air. We can't be healthy if we pollute the water. We can't be healthy. So therefore, our minds can't be healthy. That's why I see it. So the problem is the system that we're living under, and that is the problem. We need capitalism is no good. We got to get rid of it. We got to get rid of it. When we get rid of that, then we can live as human beings.
Okay, well, Vera gave us a good tour today of what you're thinking. And thank you so much for contributing today. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Trees. How are you feeling?
Okay, I'm hanging in. How about you?
I hear you. Hanging in there. Hanging on. Hanging in.
You're hanging on. I'm hanging in. Okay.
Well, I'm within good company. Speaking to your question as far as the American love affair or false love affair with the gun, I don't believe America will ever disabuse itself of the love affair with the gun. It's a false love affair, like I said yesterday. A lot of the facts or a lot of the ideas that are portrayed as facts do not comply with the gun. The gun was not in the 1700s and 1800s, in the history of this country, the gun did not play a bigger part in society as it is portrayed to, because of the economic aspects of arms manufacturers. Guns really took off after the Civil War, because in that war, it was a brother against brother, and there was a large market for guns on the North and the South, and that's where Remington, Colt, Smith & Wesson, a lot of these companies have their genesis out of that whole fiasco of states' rights and slavery. So this is where the modification and the perfection of the firearm in America came to be during the auspices of the Civil War. But another thing that no one's really mentioning, and they hardly ever do when it comes to these specific cases of young people going into learning institutions and basically just randomly shooting people, is mental health. This country doesn't deal with mental health problems accurately or even efficaciously. And it's a big problem, and it has been a big problem in this country's history, from the days of the snake pits to when Geraldo Rivera did the expose about the mental health institutions out on Long Island and Kings County, when there were all these just dumping people into rooms and loading them up with Thorazine. I have personal experience. My uncle, God rest his soul, went through a mental health crisis. And basically, when we did find him, he was in Kings County, tranked up on Thorazine. So this young man had issues. He was crying out. He had a text where he said the voices can't stop. And his love affair with the gun, his parents, as far as my opinion, were also mentally deficient, because why would you buy your son a pistol when he's manifesting these problems? And then their absence when he was arrested, this whole thing. But it goes back from Columbine to Sandy Hook. We need to address the mental state of this country. We need to have We need universal health care, we need universal counseling, and we need to catch these people before they fall through the net, be it buying a gun or a knife or whatever means they choose to enact their mental confusion or frustration.
Well, do you think that the people who run things in this country are likely to take your advice?
No. There's profit. The whole medical system, there's profit in sickness. Not to change the topic, but you call this new variant, I call it the Pfizer variant. Because even if you believe the vaccines work, Pfizer, Moderna, every expert has said on the other side, every country needs to be vaccinated to stop this virus. But Pfizer and Moderna won't release their recipes for these vaccinations, and because they stand to make billions of dollars. If this new variant is prevalent and the vaccines are proved to be effective, Pfizer stands to make over $50 billion. If you look at the stocks of Moderna and Pfizer, they've tripled and quadrupled in less than a week. And as long as there's money in the game, they'll let you burn. That's the American way. Calvin Cooley said it nearly two centuries ago, and it's still true today. The business of America is business. And if it's good for business, screw humanity.
Thank you very much for your contribution. Thank you. Always giving us something to think about. Ali from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. How are you doing?
How are you? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, when I can, I listen to the show. I like to. I think I learn more by listening than by calling. That's my. I always tell you that. And I also wanted to say, giving my best wishes to everybody. Holidays to all your listeners and all the listeners of the internet station of PRN.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I do wanted to answer, I believe, is your first question about this gun. If it's gone, it's a part of the American culture, and it's ingrained into the American culture. And if that will go beyond, and if it will ever change. You see, gun is like, it's a similar thing. I would just make it equal as a racism. Do you think or anybody think that the gun, they go hand in hand? Ahmaud Arbery was killed with a gun and because of his race. So they're together. They're interchangeable. Tamir Rice was killed with a gun and because he was a child of color. Because if that would have been a big kid, 12 years old, white, that cop would have never shot him. Trayvon Martin was killed with a gun because of his race. Emmett Till, did anything change after Emmett Till, the violence, and why he was killed? Because of his race. So, and then you see this gentleman from the House of Representatives, Thomas Massey, I think, from Kentucky. After this young man killed about four kids in that school, he took all his family and he showed himself with a gun. All of them had a rifle on their hand. I'm very smiling. So there is one group of people in this nation that, and I always go back to something that you said, who has the right in this country and who is a citizen? You always say, who is a citizen? You know who is a citizen? A citizen is like that man with the family and with those rifles. But because when you have one and you are a person of color, you are not a citizen and you don't have the right to have it, even if you have a permit. And we already know because Castile was killed inside his car. And why he was killed? Because of his race. And who killed him? The cop with a gun. So do I ever think that the gun culture is ingrained in this, like you said? Yes. So it's racism. Do we think it's going to change? No. We'll never, never. That is part, it's almost on the flag that these people, they wave at you. Because you could go to every country, most country, and you don't see flag, people with the flag on the yard, on the desk. You don't see that thing, but you only see it in this country. So those are the people that they will never change the culture. The culture will never change. It will. These two things, they are integrated together. Look, the government is even afraid of these people. Any militia that attack anywhere, it's very hard for them to even to go to jail. Look at them on January 6th. The government is afraid of them. They don't even want to put them in jail. So, no, there's only one group of people in this land that they have the right to carry guns, that they're citizens of this country. They could be racist. And even if they call themselves progressive, and I will finish soon, I just wanted to tell you, that every time that one of these kids, they do something, they call them children. But when they kill Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, they never called them kids. They never. As a matter of fact, for Tamir Rice, they say he was a young 22-year-old man. And it turned out he was 12. So,
12 years old.
Yeah, and this is, and Rittenhouse, the Rittenhouse, somebody that I know, she's supposed to be a liberal progressive. She said that she felt during that, when she saw him in court, sitting on that table, she said, oh, I do feel bad for him. So, I confronted her. I said, do you feel bad for the rest of the black kids? And Latino kids? So, no, it would never, never. Gun violence by them, by one group, the group that is citizen of this land. It would never change. It's like racism. It would never change. It's part of the flag.
That's a pretty dire prediction that you're giving us today, Ali.
Take a look at history. It hasn't changed. Emmett Till, look what they do to Emmett Till, and they continue down the line. We have history after history. It's slavery. That's how they kept the slavery on the line. Hitting them, violence, and gun violence. So, no, it would never. We would have to be completely destroyed and born again. That's how I think. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in. 888-874-4888. You're on the air. Hello? Okay. Well, what we're hearing are the views from different vantage points, but we also should be hearing some common themes to them all. And the question then becomes, the very next question is this country able to disassemble this problem and break it down and deal with the component parts so as to come to a thorough healing? I don't think so either. I tend to agree with Ali. I just don't see it happening. But I pay attention to the reaction. This is an issue that should have intense blowback, intense reaction. But you know, the thing is that we don't see that. We have it as an isolated story presented to us. And the updates and the latest developments. But we don't see it in the way that Ali just talked about. We don't see it in the way that Ed talked about and Vera talked about. We're not seeing it that way, for the most part. And yet we know that it is that way. Why? 888-874-4888. You're on the air.
Hello?
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 Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I hear all the kinds of opinions. I really respect the gentleman from the Bronx who called. Your topic is very adjacent. It's nuanced. You realize it's multifaceted. I mean, you have hunters, and then you have parents who spoil their children who feel they need a gun. There's all different factors involved. Some of these children are not in reality, because, you know, the video games are extremely violent, right? You know, the video games that they're raised on now. So there's all these different nuances that factor in. But I felt bad when I heard the lady from Manhattan saying that racism is never going to change. Never. Well, I mean, you can't say never. Come on. We have to have hope. We need hope. If you believe in love, I think love is the only thing that's going to work here, that's going to cure. But also, I have spoken about this issue with many people, and they brought up, some people brought up the fact, well, the government wants to take our guns, and then when the government comes after us, we will have no defense. So I know there's that mindset where, if you think they're going to be able to put an end to guns, well, maybe you need a license. But I know many people want to keep their gun because they don't trust the government. And that's one of the reasons. So it's not only a polarity between different tribes or different ethnic groups or whatever. It's really people that don't trust the government. That's kind of what it was started as in this country, because, you know, you had Great Britain lording over us, and we were the little scraggly rebels, and, you know, so people said, we gotta fight Britain. So, you know, our country has a very nuanced and checkered past, you know? It's not so simple.
Yeah, but who are the we you're talking about?
I say we. We who call ourselves the ragtag Americans. I mean, everyone's ethnically diverse. I mean, I see so much. I mean, I really don't believe that racism is a monodimensional thing. I think, like, for instance, three women every day are murdered by their husbands or boyfriends. And that's like femicide. Femicide is a really horrific thing that doesn't get discussed enough. And then there's all kinds of different, you know, I don't think that the kid who Rittenhouse, he didn't kill for a reason. He was killing because he was politically motivated. It was like, wouldn't lump him in with Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin was killed by a nut who was a racist nut, son of a judge. You know, his murderer was a son of a judge. He was half Peruvian, half American, whatever. It's like he was a confused individual, you know. So, I mean, we all have our stories, you know. You know, but it's not a one-dimensional thing. It's not like, I see so much love going on whereby people help each other and they don't care, you know. They just look at everyone as people, you know. We're all people, and we can't just dwell on, you know. But police, judicial systems, they all make the same.
So do you deny that in these centuries of recent U.S. history, that this is not a factor, and it isn't the way several callers have seen it? It's not like that?
Several callers, yes. I mean, racism is a terrible thing, and it also goes both ways. I know many African Americans, I'm part African American, but I see African Americans that don't want to even speak with white people. They don't even know. They don't want to even speak with them, and the white people have nothing negative to impart, or, you know, they're not trying to be adversarial. But, I mean, there's a polarity is what you're speaking about. There's a polarity that has developed, but we all have our problems and our memories and our stories, you know,
okay.
But it's not easy to sort out. but I see, you know, many good, loving people, and you see these people that are, like, for instance, Rickenhouse, they say, was a nut job because he had problems of his own, and then the other individual in Colorado, he was had problems in school, right? So, you know, there's all kinds of
background. Well, you know, at some point we have to get real about what we have experienced and continue to experience every day in the United States. And it seems to me that very often we have ready explanations as to why people are racist, why they do the things they do, why are they killing people? Because they can. How about that as an explanation?
Yes, they feel disempowered and they want to show power that they want to feel powerful, but you're right about that. You're totally right. I mean, it's a whacked up, I mean, the violence that's promoted. How about this? Our war Jones is coming back to roost. I mean, we have perpetuated so much violence. Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and you
yes,
name
but
it.
We've had wars right here. We have wars at,
exactly.
We have a
coming
history,
back,
historical record
back
of wars of systematic extinction and extermination right here.
Exactly.
Right here in this country.
Yes. And that's why, that was my point about why people don't want to give up their guns, because they feel that the government is perpetuating a lot of this, and they don't trust the government. So that's why they want to keep their guns. Not, I know.
No, I doubt that.
All tribes.
I don't. I would challenge that argument, because it is not a strong and convincing argument, in my view.
Oh, okay.
People do things because they can do them. It's plain and simple. They do not generally sit down at a table and write a manifesto explaining why they are about to slaughter half their town. They do not engage in intellectual evaluations of what they are about to do. They're operating on automatic. Pardon the pun, but
yes. Well,
we do have to look at the reality that most of these incidents that we end up reading about and talking about do not involve deep thought. They don't.
Yes, but a counselor at one, several counselors at schools have noted that these kids were troubled. They were picked on by some of the cliques in the school, like the elite kids were picking on them. And then they wanted to lash out to get revenge against the people they felt were berating them or harassing them, you know?
How about this?
They were
some people are genuinely, mentally, seriously ill.
Yes.
And we do not normally compute that in our version of society. In our version of society, everybody's reasonably normal. We do not even count people who are disaffected or people having trouble, or people who are alienated. We don't count these people. We don't even recognize that they exist, except when they explode and uncontrollably they cause even more havoc.
Yes, because we are just consumers. We are not even individuals anymore. We're considered consumers. And like the other gentleman was saying about money, money is too, we need, you know, it's the capitalist system, also capitalism, I call it. It's capitalism because it's gone wild. We need social democracy.
But, you know, all these things that are being said are shorthand for let's not focus on the problem. Let's come up with some ancillary issue that would divert our attention into something else. We have very sick people in this country and have had it for a long, long time.
But only last
year. We have had no comprehensive response. We have had no credible interventions. And we keep coming up with reasons to explain why people are the way they are, rather than say, how do we explore ways of ameliorating a situation or being a bit more proactive so that we can help people who are in this serious mental trouble?
Yes. They need some real attention, but it has to be based on love. I just think many of these people are never, when they're dealt with, they're dealt with in a punitive way, and that's it. They never get the social outreach that they need. They never get that. They get shunted from here to there to here to there, and they need some kind of nurturing that they didn't get or they missed out on. Something is missing there.
What is missing is that we have a need for the relevant sectors, people who know how to handle this, people who have gotten doctorates in this area, people who have written books. We have all this expertise, but we never have it in time, it seems, until there's an explosion.
Also, many of those people don't get to do anything. They're not considered. They have the wrong people running the system sometimes. They just want
whatever it is, we have to talk about it and insist that there be an institutional change, a dramatic institutional change. And by that I mean through government, through private agencies, through public agencies, wherever, to begin to look systemically at this problem with an eye toward helping to solve a problem and be ahead of it rather than waiting to see it explode and then react.
Exactly. And the privatization of the prisons has exacerbated the problem because it's about money, like the gentleman was saying.
Let's not go over there. Let's stay on point. And I thank you so much for contributing so meaningfully. Thank you very much. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Okay, Marcus from Wisconsin.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Utrice. I'll take a chorus on this. I'll try to assist to the subject of whether we've made progress and sort of the nature of this as I've come to see it over a long, long time. Basically, people do what their circumstances dictate that they do. If you live in a system that you win the game by cooperating, people will generally cooperate. If you live in a system where, like ours, where you win the game by competing, people will compete. And of course, they won't pay any attention to the limits of that. And as usual, when we discuss these things, we take ourselves out of it. We talk about this reified thing called violence. Violence bad, and what we want is undefined, but it's good and it's peaceful. Look, everybody has a share of social violence. everybody. The lawyers have their classifications, but everybody basically breaks down homicide into four categories. There's felonious, illegal, excusable, justifiable, and praiseworthy. There are times when violence is a very laudable thing, like when you're doing it for self-defense. We don't complain about violence then. We think it's great. So there are other ways where it's more complicated. Golgosh, who assassinated President McKinley, was thought to be mentally ill. That's what history said forever. Well, we know now that, no, he was actually quite sane, and he did it in revenge for the slaughtered Slavic miners that the state sanctioned in Latimer. Okay, is that insane? No, he had a reason for doing it. So, the idea that we are somehow separated from all of this, I think is just false. If you want a society that promotes protecting innocence, then you need a society with a system focused on doing that. We live in a society that is focused on protecting criminals, especially wealthy criminals. The more wealthy you are, it doesn't matter how criminal you are, the law will accommodate you. The law is a spider web for them. It's an iron cage for the people who are defenseless. So technically, what the murder you were describing is called freelance multiple murder. That's what it's categorized as. But if you look at American history, we have invented all kinds of violence since the very beginning. This kind of murder that you're describing goes back to the 18th century. The founding of the country. There were lots of examples of it. This is nothing new. We pretend that it's something new so we can pretend that we have this glorified past where we were all getting along and it was wonderful and we're all peaceful and sane. We never were. Not here. Not ever, and not any place in human history that I can see in the last 10,000 years. If you want that imaginary state that we like to pretend, you have to go back to when we were hunter-gatherers. There, this kind of violence was almost unknown as far as we can tell. That wars of attrition were unknown. Gender inequality was unknown. We lived in small tribal bands. We're just in denial about our own roles. Are you driving a car? You're benefiting from organized mass murder around the world for resources. Now, we can pretend we're not part of this, but we are. So let's stop compartmentalizing, I think. That's the first task. And realize that if somebody commits murders like this, we're complicit in it somehow. How? We're condoning it in some way. We're taking part in a system that promotes it. We are part of it. So let's stop with there's this objective thing called violence that we're not a part of. We're immersed in it every moment. That's my view on it. Thank you, Utrice.
Well, thank you. Very insightful. And it should cause us to revisit our own definitions, actually. And I thank you for that. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I thank you all, because you make such an effort to make things clearer and to dissect things that many people would find way too onerous to deal with. And you make it that we can wrap our brains around it when we hear you explain it your way. Thank you so much. let's get together again tomorrow to do some more talking. Thank you, and thank you, and thank you. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.